He is immortal. Born in the Highlands of Scotland 400 years ago, he is not alone. There are others like him. Some good, some evil. For centuries, he has battled the forces of darkness, with holy ground his only refuge. He cannot die unless you take his head and with it his power. In the end, there can be only one. He is Duncan MacLeod, the Highlander.
And welcome into Let's Watch Highlander. This is Let's Watch Highlander Season 3, Episode 4, The Cross of St. Antoine. And here to talk with you about this series, I'm your host Travis, a.k.a. TV's Travis, and with me, as always, is Audie. And Audie, how are you this week?
Good, man. Doing all right. A little brush close contact with COVID, so we're quarantining this week, but Everybody's okay. We're taking tests later, so nothing we're really concerned about. It's just a speed bump
right yeah. now. Yeah. So. Well, you know, I think the bummer of it has got to be the kids were back to school for what, like 4 days, 5 days? And then...
We've been 3 weeks.
Oh, that's right. We've been week four. Yeah, okay.
We went back early.
But still, I mean, they were just getting back, getting into the swing of things, and now they got to stay at home for 2 weeks, so...
Yeah, so Norman Academy, back at it. So. The teachers have been good about giving us the assignments they need to do and being like, okay, you can do this, don't worry about that. So doing what we can.
Good, good. Things have been pretty quiet around here. Not a whole lot going on. Bella's being Bella, and it's been hot, like 90-something degrees and humid, and the sun being out just beating down on you. It's been brutal here, and I'm ready for it to be done. We're what, like a week and a half away from the unofficial end of summer? And
sure, you say so.
I mean, it's not going to get that much cooler that much quicker, but it'd be nice. I did hear that Starbucks now has pumpkin spice lattes on the menu again, which means fall is officially here. But
okay, great. I don't drink coffee, so I could care less one way or the other.
Fair enough. But yeah, I mean, it hasn't been too bad. So this was an episode. There's some good stuff here. There's some things I very much question here. We'll get into that. But before we do, I was rifling through that box again, and I found yet another one. I found a Watcher Chronicle for this episode, so here it is. The Watcher Chronicle for the Cross of St. Antoine.
All right.
October 16th, 1994. It's been a rough last few months for Joe Dawson and for the Watchers. With everything that happened involving Horton going after Immortals, and MacLeod in particular, it hasn't been easy for him. I mean, he has been MacLeod's watcher for a while now. But Horton was his brother-in-law. I think opening this bar is much more than just a new cover for him in Seacover. October 17th. I've never seen Dawson this happy. I knew that having the bar open would be a big deal for him, but he's practically floating on a cloud. He did mention something about a woman he met, and that he was seeing her tonight. A man deserves to be happy for once. It's tough being a watcher sometimes, but at least we can still have something of a normal life. I hope things work out. It's pretty great seeing him like this. And it sure makes working for him a good bit easier.
So we begin at Joe's bar. Duncan and Amanda. Amanda's in town.
Yeah.
It's always great. She's hanging out with Duncan. They have a fun little exchange talking about her taking on a real job. Which I thought was fun. And then she and Joe get to meet for the first time. And that was a fun little scene. I did enjoy that.
The Amanda?
Yep. Oh, that was cool to see Joe kind of fanboy a little bit and Amanda know who he is. So that was cool. Right. And Joe, in the beginning of this episode, is just like walking on clouds. Like he is just in a great mood. And what we find out is he's got a lady in his life. He's got someone that he is seeing. Her name is Lauren. They met at the library, I believe it is, and he is on his way to go see her. And he is in such a good mood, he tells Duncan and Amanda, whatever you want, it's on the house, and takes off. Gets to her house, and did you recognize the house, by the way?
I did. I made a note about that.
I did, too.
That house again?
So that is now, what, the third time we've seen this same house?
third or fourth, yeah.
In the third or fourth different iteration of it too. It's not like they try to hide it. It's the same damn house.
Yeah, they pulled back a lot more, so it, you know, different angle, but yeah, that was that house.
But Joe gets there. He goes to knock on the door. Nobody answers, and then he sees a struggle going on inside, and it's Lauren. She's being attacked by somebody. He's trying to break in the window. Can't do it. She gets killed, and her attacker runs off. And then we cut to Joe with Duncan and Amanda, and he's upset.
Mm-hmm.
And rightfully so. He's angry. He feels like he should have been able to do more. And then he asks Duncan for help. He wants Duncan's help to get the guy that did it because the police aren't going to look for who it is. Which is one of my qualms with this episode, but we'll kind of get to that as we go. So Lauren was working on some antiquities for a collector named Armin Thorne. Mm-hmm. And so Duncan, Amanda, and Joe head to Armin Thorne's museum to get information, find out what Lauren was working on, when she had left, yada, yada, yada. We get kind of a fun little moment where Amanda's being Amanda. She can't help it. Even though she's gone straight, she still got to look at stuff and, you know, think about how she would steal this or that and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And they leave, but before they can leave, as Duncan is chastising Amanda, he sees a golden cross, and that triggers a flashback. Coming out of the flashback, we see Duncan and Amanda for like a real quick, it was almost like an interlude in between moments in the flashbacks. It was kind of a different structure, which I, mm-hmm. I sort of appreciated that. But essentially, we get a moment with them and Duncan's like, hey, do you remember an immortal named John Durgan, who is somebody that Duncan met in the flashback, which we'll talk about. Amanda doesn't know who he is. And we go back into the flashback. We learn some more backstory. Yeah. Meanwhile, Amanda goes and visits Joe at the bar. Joe's very upset. She finds him at the bottom of a bottle, and it's early, even for an immortal to be drinking. but while she's there, she asks him about Watcher records. And meanwhile, Duncan goes to the Thorne Mansion because now that he's seen the cross, he believes that John Durgan, an immortal that he met in the past, is somehow connected because the last time he saw that cross, it was John Durgan taking it. So he goes and pokes around, tries to get information. Of course, Mr. Thorne won't see him and all this kind of stuff. Eventually, Thorne gets a hold of Duncan and says, let's meet. I'll send a car. The car takes Duncan to a church where he feels the presence of an immortal and goes inside. And who's there? John Durgan.
Mm-hmm.
But now his name is Armin Thorne, and he's a collector and a businessman, and he's very different from the man that Duncan last saw.
Mm-hmm.
So Duncan confronts him, tells him about Lauren. Durgan admits that he killed her, and Duncan threatens him. Durgan says, oh, I'm out of the game. I don't do that anymore. Duncan's like, I don't care. I'm coming after you. He's rich, he's very powerful, and he basically tells Duncan, try it, you're never going to get to me. Which, you know, I kind of appreciate that out of somebody. Like, it's not...
Yeah.
It's a different tactic, which, you know, we will definitely talk about. But Duncan devises a good plan, and it's actually a pretty smart thing to do. He realizes what Durgan values, so he convinces Amanda to help him steal the cross.
Yeah.
So they Amanda's do. Kidding. Oh, yes, she is. So they do. They steal the cross in an effort to get Durgan / Thorne to kind of pony up and come after them. Mm-hmm. It semi backfires, though, because he kidnaps Joe.
Right.
Which we don't actually see happen, but he gets Joe and offers to trade Joe for his valuables that Duncan has stolen. So they meet back at the same church, and through a confluence of things we're going to talk about, Duncan and Durgan fight, and Duncan comes out on top. We do also end the episode, I think, with a really cool moment, which is Duncan and Amanda getting to see Joe singing in the bar and kind of working through his emotions a little bit. And I really liked that moment. So they did some good stuff with Joe in this episode, but
they did.
Again, it's a fairly straightforward plot, which is when the show is at its best. I do have some issues, some things that are kind of silly, don't really work that well, but a little bit. But we do have a couple of special guests, and I think that we should talk about them.
Sure.
Joe, I want you to meet Amanda. Amanda? Joe Dawson.
The Amanda? You know, I've heard an awful lot about
her. I bet you have. I hear you're one of those guys who likes to watch.
So we have two special guests this week. First up, Amanda's back. Elizabeth Grayson.
Yeah, she
comes
is.
Back. She's got longer hair now, which I'd forgotten she grew it out for a little while in the series.
Yeah.
I personally think that with, maybe it's because I remember her more with the shorter hair, but I think that works better for her. But it's great to have her back because Elizabeth Grayson and Adrian Paul have a great chemistry together. When they're when they're being playful, when they're flirting, it's really believable, and it's nice to see Duncan get that with somebody who he's familiar with, and it's not just some random like, oh, here's the woman that he met in this episode type of thing.
Right.
So because that was, I mean, we talked a lot about the fact that the first season, what was so strong about it was the relationship with Duncan and Tessa, because we got to see that build and we got to feel that. So while this isn't quite that same relationship, because the characters have more familiarity and because we get to see Amanda more than once, it feels to me like a better relationship. So I kind of like that.
It's also that with this series, if you've been following it, you've seen Amanda enough that we skip right to that relationship. There's not a whole bunch of time spent on where did you meet or what happened. It's just like, oh, Amanda's around. Okay, cool.
Yeah, because she's a familiar face, we can skip all that and go right to kind of the real relationship part of it, which I dig. I also like going playful with her in terms of like she's trying to make a real go of work and not just be a thief anymore. And they played on that pretty well. You know, there's a moment where she's telling Duncan, like, you know, for 300 years you've been trying to get me to stop stealing and now you want me to steal again? Like...
That was a great line.
And
that was good.
What I liked about it was she starts off, she's complaining about the work, right? That she's doing. Not that the work itself is bad, but that she decided to be head of security for a rock star who has a huge ego. We don't ever get a name. We don't ever see her doing that. So, you know, you can insert whoever you want in there. But I kind of liked that because it's like, that seems like a really strange direction for her to go in, to be head of security for a rock star.
Right. It's one of those things where it's like, okay, this is Amanda taking a job, and that's funny in and of itself. But you also layer in the fact of like, this sounds like somebody with a job, like who's not an immortal, who's just a regular person, and just on top of Amanda being Amanda, it's just, it's a fun layer that is more like, it makes it more than just a normal job. It's like a normal job done by this person is just that much more funny.
Well, it cracks me up to think that her idea of getting a real job is to be head of security for somebody who roams around the country doing shows. Like, it's such a weird thing to think about as somebody like, oh, I'm going to get a real job and this is what I'm going to go do. But then it also feels like a very Amanda thing to do.
Right.
So I did like that. Plus, it's still Amanda, right? So when they're in the museum, her first thing is to go start looking at stuff, and she's not just looking at the shinies and how valuable they are. She's also immediately sees all of the security. Like, she just can't shut that part of her brain off.
There's the cameras. Did you see those lasers over there? I sure did.
Yep. And I kind of like that having her in here and then later on going into the sort of mini heist, you can have those moments early on in the episode where if they never do the heist part of it, if Duncan never asks her to help him steal something in the episode, that scene still works. Mm-hmm. That scene in the beginning still works because it's still Amanda and it's still Duncan and the playful thing that they do. But then you can also easily have it transition into what they did, which is Duncan's like, all right, look, I need your help. And I love the moment where they come back from the heist and Duncan is excited because it went so well. And she is just giddy until she has the realization like, oh yeah, no, this isn't going to last. Is it like, I'm not actually getting back into stealing stuff.
Yeah. I mean, it's just fun playing that dynamic with them. And I also appreciate that because this is somebody we already know, we get past a lot of the introduction stuff. Like, mm-hmm. we get more character of Amanda dealing with Joe, talking to Duncan about dealing with this stuff. Like, just that much more of somebody that we already really enjoy, and getting some more actual character out of them is just a lot of fun.
Yeah. I mean, she really empathizes with Joe and what he's going through and the loss that he's feeling. So she wants to help him out. So it's great to see her take it upon herself to go to Joe to talk to mm-hmm. him, but then also to, you know, because it's Amanda, she never does just one thing. She doesn't just go to console Joe. She goes to console Joe. Hey, I'm going to get some more info while I'm here too. Cause mm-hmm. I got a name. She got that name, Durgan. Let's go find out what we can. So I kind of, I really like that. And I liked her role, even though it was basically just being kind of a diversion at the end, because it made something different to set up the fight. And it gave us a fun way to get Durgan separated and on his own. And it shows a little bit of Amanda rubbing off on Duncan, being a little bit sneakier, but also Duncan kind of outsmarting Durgan.
Yeah, it was a very, very good way of Duncan to get him off of holy ground where he could actually fight him.
Yeah. So that was cool. Any episode with Amanda is a good episode, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. So it was great to see her there. Plus, you know, you also get the fun moment of her trying to sort of teach Duncan what they're going to do on the heist, and the playfulness of all that. And then Duncan just dropping her in the harness.
Yeah.
So that was fun too. I really enjoyed mm-hmm. that. Our other special guest is John Durgan, AKA Armin Thorne, played by Brian James.
Yeah.
Now, if the name Brian James doesn't ring a bell immediately, you've seen him. You've seen him in a lot of movies, especially in the 80s. Typically as an enforcer or a thug or like a big burly dude. He was in Blade Runner is one that a lot mm-hmm. of people know him from. And he has got a really interesting presence about him because he just looks mean. He's a big, like, kind of angry looking dude. He's very tall. Mm-hmm. I have two complaints about him in this episode. And one of them is not his fault, per se. And one of them is a stylistic choice that I don't understand whatsoever. So the one that's not his fault, he was probably about 50 when they made this. So he's getting up there. He sadly passed away in 1999 at age 54. He was also in The Fifth Element, 48 Hours.
That's where I remember him.
Yeah,
from most of all, is Fifth Element.
What I like about him, before I get to the stuff I didn't like in this episode, a few things that I like about him. He often played that big, you know, kind of bruising guy, right? He's tall, mm-hmm. tall, very well built, very strong looking, but he had really good comedic timing. So, like him in The Fifth Element, he was funny in The Fifth Element as General Monroe.
Mm-hmm.
He was really good in that. So I liked. I've always liked that about Brian James, is he had this ability to be big and intimidating and angry, but also funny
mm-hmm.
and not in a way that felt forced. He had a weird looking isn't the right word, but he had a unique looking face. He could make some interesting facial expressions. He could play mm-hmm. and what works with him in this role is he can play very dapper, very well spoken, very, educated, articulate, or he can be a barbarian brute slurring his words.
Yeah.
And he's believable as both of those. So that worked for this character.
Absolutely.
Cause this is one. So immortals in this series kind of come in like basically two or three flavors. They either are exactly the same as they were always. They never change mm-hmm. whatsoever, or they have a complete 180 of their personalities from flashbacks to present day. And he falls into that one. He's one of the, because when we first meet him in the flashback, he's just dumber than a bag of hammers. He can't read, can't write. He just traps. Mm-hmm. He's a younger immortal, and all he does knows to do is to trap off the land. And he's very selfish, and he's very brutish, and he has no social graces. He lives on his own out in the woods, all that kind of stuff. He evolved himself outwardly.
Mm-hmm.
But he's still the same person inside. He's still the selfish, greedy, only cares about money type of person, value.
Right.
But his outer exterior now is crushed velvet suits and slicked hair and well-spoken, speaks 9 languages. You know, when Duncan meets him, he can't read or write. Now he speaks 9 languages, including Latin and Greek. Like, so that was always interesting. So my two issues, and you tell me what you think about both of these. One, not entirely his fault. Him being around 50 when this was made, he didn't quite have the same physical presence that I'm used to seeing him with. He looked a little bit dumpy at times. When he was wearing the full suit, you can kind of hide that. But when he had his suit jacket open, he was looking a little softer on the middle. And what it really did for me was, it made the final fight, they had to hide that about him. He wasn't in the best shape of his life anymore. The way he moved, even in the one or two scenes where he had to run, he didn't run. He ran like his body was breaking down. And it's unfortunate, because I know he was getting towards the end, and he probably put his body through hell leading up to that. But that was the bummer for me, because in his prime, he would have been such a great physical foil for Duncan.
Sure.
And he just wasn't that at this point. So that's not necessarily his fault. That's a nitpick on my part.
Yeah, and that's not something that really bothered me at all. I didn't notice it too much. I noticed him not being the actual one doing the fighting, but we've come to see that with a lot of fights. So that didn't throw me off or make me think that much of it.
Yeah, I mean, they used stunt doubles, and it was interesting how they were able to do that. We'll kind of I want to dive into that a little bit more when we talk about that fight, how they hid him.
Right.
Because also, I think constantly,
I think it fits his character as well as somebody who has amassed wealth and amassed protection. He probably is not as good a fighter as Duncan is. Like, he probably got lucky in that fight a couple times. Being a bigger, maybe stronger guy. I mean, he probably kept in shape and stuff, but I doubt the way he went about it and saying he's out of the game, I doubt he really trained the same way we see Duncan continually train in episodes.
Yes, that is a fair point. And you bring up a good point there. So, yes. I think for me, it was more of like, I remember Brian James so much as this.
You know,
I remember him as Leon. I think that's what it is. It's Leon from Blade Runner. When I think of Brian James, that's the first thing I think of. And Leon was not somebody you wanted to meet in an alley, bright or dark, because Leon would mess you up. So I think that's what it was. Now, my other issue with the character is a stylistic choice of, I'm going to play you something, okay? I'm going to play this for you.
I know exactly what you're doing.
Why did he sound like some sort of a Velociraptor T-Rex monster thing when he would yell? What was that about? Like,
yeah,
it was... We made fun of having Horton having the lion roar when they would show Horton, which was silly, right? Because it wasn't Horton making the noise. It was just they associated the sound with him. And I thought that was silly enough. This wasn't just associating that sound with John Durgan. This was Durgan yelling, and they put that sound in, and it was so dumb.
That against the wall. And it did not stick.
No. And they did it like 3 times in the episode too.
That was a bad choice.
It's just bad. It's so bad. I got to play it one more time. I'm sorry. This literally we're watching a scene. He's just attacked a priest, stolen this golden cross from him. As Duncan rides up, he shot Duncan off of a horse. And then the camera cuts back to him, and it's just his face yelling, and you hear this. No.
Yeah.
Don't do that show.
I think that the only way that could have been handled well is if he made some retort later in current time saying, I don't even yell like that anymore. I am different. I am changed. If it's still a dumb yell. It's still a dumb sound effect. But if they had made maybe one little thing, it might have redeemed it just a little bit. Just maybe. Saying I've changed, but it's still, a dumb sound effect.
But if you take that out of it, I think Brian James is good. Absolutely. Because I think that he definitely, unlike the problem we had with last week's villain was that he was unremarkable and unmemorable. Whereas Brian James is getting back to what we had in our first two episodes, which were special guests that were elevated and above what you expect them to be.
Mm-hmm.
And it's on the level of a Randall Tex Cobb.
Right. He takes the material and just by the sheer force of his acting ability makes it better.
Mm-hmm. Yep. His presence, his charisma, his ability to play both sides of that coin, that's what worked. Just don't have him yell like a velociraptor.
Yeah, that wasn't good. One more person I noticed.
Sure.
Associate priest or whatever.
Yeah.
Second. That's Jason Gray Stanford. Mm-hmm. This is one of those guys who's a character actor who's been around forever, and I immediately recognized him. I was like, hey, that dude.
Yep. Yeah, and it's funny because I always conflate him and the guy that was in Basketball, and some of the other Matt Parker Trey Parker, Matt Stone things. There's a guy that's in those, and I know it's not this same actor. I know it's not Jason Gray Stanford, but I have that moment. It's sort of my Stephen McHattie, Lance Henriksen, where it takes me a second. Like, wait, which one was it again? Okay, no, that's Jason Gray Stanford. That's that's somebody else. But yeah, he's one of those guys. You see him in, he showed up in an episode of The Boys. Monk, he was on for a long time.
Yep.
All those kind of things. iZombie, he showed up in X-Files. X-Files, he was actually in both the original run and the new run.
Oh.
Which I thought was kind of
cool. I didn't realize he came back. Nice.
Yeah.
Him and the other thing that I was interested in, just him and the girl that played Miss Wesley, the teacher. Like, they both are, like, big-time voice actors. I did not realize that about him. And looking her up, I was like, holy crap. This is, like, one of the few times she's been on camera, and the rest, it's, like, all kinds of voice acting. So.
Oh, yeah. Lot
really,
of.
Really interesting, the actors they get in here.
It is. She did a lot of anime English dubs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I did not
know
that.
To this day.
So I think overall it was pretty good work with kind of guest stars in this episode. You're right in that we are noticing that this show had a lot of like bit parts played by people that, oh yeah, they went on to do a lot of stuff or whatnot. So it's kind of cool.
You're here for me.
Just passing through. Name's Duncan MacLeod of the Clan MacLeod.
John Durgan, no clan. I like it alone.
So our flashback in this episode is kind of one big flashback chopped up into a couple of segments. And really felt like that because we had the flashback and then we immediately get two very short scenes that kind of bookended like a commercial break.
Right.
And then we're right back into flashback.
Mm-hmm.
So it almost felt like they originally had shot that as one long flashback and then realized they had to chop it up for the commercial break at the time, and because of that they threw in kind of contemporary scenes. They didn't want to go into the commercial break from come out of a commercial break with the flashback. It would be my guess, I think, from a structural standpoint. But they take place at the Snake River Mountains in Montana in 1817. We get that time stamp. Duncan is out there. He actually he comes upon a priest and his assistant doing baptisms in the river before somebody tries to steal that cross. Everyone wants that big gold cross, which is interesting because it's the MacGuffin of the episode, and yet it's really not important at all.
Not really.
Like, the episode is named after it. It's the driving force behind Durgan kind of in the flashback, but then present day, it's just sort of he has it.
Yeah. So. It's really funny that they made this big, gaudy looking cross
mm-hmm.
to make the connection. Like, I don't know if it's somebody was just in special effects, was like, let me make a big old cross for you. Let me make a really good big old cross for you. And they were like, okay, fine. And they made this big old cross. And it's just like, ugh. Because there's no way somebody out in the middle of nowhere America in 1817 would get a cross like that sent.
Well, that's the thing. He says he brought it from the Vatican himself.
True.
So, I don't know. It's interesting. I mean, buy it as a symbol, but mm-hmm. it's hard. I'm with you in that it's hard to see somebody taking that far out. Like, I could see somebody bringing it from the Vatican to New York. Or, you know, some like a larger city on the East Coast, Chicago, mm-hmm. something like that. But to just take it out to the woods of Montana.
Yeah. And especially to carry it around like that,
right.
around people like this, like that to me sets off a whole bunch of theological things. I'm like, okay, what kind of vain priest was this? You know, that kind of thing. And I'm like, something they'll never get into. They'd never touch. They'd mm-hmm. never go that far for that character. But just that little bit of it makes me think, oh Lord, why would you have this big old honking thing?
Well, you know, and the other part of it too, is like he carried that thing all the way out there and had it on his person all the time, but then goes to do a baptism without it and makes a point of explaining to Durgan that the it's the symbol that matters, not the material it's made out of.
Right.
It's like, well, if that's the case, why did you lug this thing across the continent in the first place?
Mm-hmm. Why are you showing it off everywhere, dude?
Yeah. So it was a little funky. But yeah, Duncan stops that from getting stolen. Ends up back at the fort, and that's where he runs into Durgan. And they have their exchange is good, and they're immediately, I would call it cordial, but they're not friendly.
Right.
But Duncan has no real quarrel with him, so he's not mm-hmm. he's not standoffish about it.
Right.
Even him being another immortal. It's not mm-hmm. and because of that, is partially how Durgan is able to kind of get in the positions that he is, because if you think about it, if Duncan had been not Duncan, if Duncan had been a different immortal and not the nice, good person that he is, he might have attacked him earlier mm-hmm. and some of these things wouldn't have happened. I'm not saying anything is Duncan's fault, but because of Duncan being who he is and Durgan being who he is,
mm-hmm.
you know, Durgan can't quite stop himself. The second flashback is when you find out that Durgan is, because the first one ends with Durgan seeing the cross as it comes into the fort and starting to covet it immediately.
Right.
And so we get our first glimpse of, oh, this guy just likes money. And then he's bickering with somebody over trading his furs. He sees the young teacher who's coming to collect money. And that scene is very interesting to me because they set it up where he's established that he can't read and write. And then he sees this young girl and she's collecting money for the new school. And then you see him right outside the school and kind of following her. Mm-hmm. So it's a weird, I couldn't remember the episode. So I'm like, how are they setting this up? And then for him to use the, I'd like to learn how to read. Nope. I'm just going to choke you and take the money.
Yeah.
So it's sort of bait and switch, kind of led us in a few different directions. It was weird.
mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a little weird, but honest enough the way he acted.
Well, sure. No. It definitely, as the episode went on, you realized, okay, that is how he is. He isn't going to be the creepy mm-hmm. guy. He isn't attacking her because she's a woman. He just saw her with money, wants the money.
Right.
And figured out a way, but it was the lead up to that was a little strange. As the episode went on, it made mm-hmm. more sense.
Right.
And then our third flashback is Duncan getting ready to leave the fort when he asks where the father, the priest is. And Jonah says, oh, he took your friend to the river to do a baptism. And what I liked about that was Duncan immediately is like, oh, that's a red flag. Let's go. And takes right off. But he's there too late. And then we hear Durgan's famous yell as he takes off with the cross.
Yeah.
So,
that was
Yeah. I'm not letting the yell go, man. That thing was bad.
Yeah, it was.
But outside of that, I liked the flashbacks. I liked them because this was the first of the flashbacks that kind of take place in these frontier areas where they can hide the budget, but it doesn't look like they're hiding the budget.
Right. Like, for sure.
It looked like what I would expect a fort to look.
Mm-hmm.
Because we had a couple of them where it's like, oh, you can tell this was the low budget part of things because it felt like that. This was definitely them saving some money, but not in a way that looked detrimental. So, you know.
Right. Oh, yeah.
But yeah, I mean, overall, I enjoyed the flashbacks. I liked seeing, you know, some nice actors in these little bit parts in there, which was cool. The guy that played Father Peter, David Longworth. I've seen him in stuff before. He had a recognizable face. I couldn't remember what it was, but.
Right.
Lloyd Barry, who played Billows, who was the trader. Running the trading post. He was, you know, these are quality actors for these small, quick couple of scene roles that make it work better.
For sure. Again, just whoever's hiring and, you know, casting is doing an amazing job on this show because they're, for the most part, finding some great people to do the roles that they need to do, you know, especially these smaller ones and just, you know, making it work. That it's something where we're not criticizing the small stuff at all.
No,
it's like the specific choices, the main actors is where we have the biggest nitpicks. If we have our nitpicks, but never with the behind the scenes people doing anything too dumb or stupid or just not sounding right at all.
No, we've really, I mean, after the, once they found their stride in the first season, we didn't see a whole lot of that. So that's good. That's really good. It's production level that is above the budget that they had.
Right.
Which is great. So yeah, it's good. It's good flashbacks. It's good stuff.
You can't search around world over. Never
know the reason why. So no Richie again in this episode. And while Dr. Ann Lindsay, played by Lisa Howard, is in the credits, she's not in the episode. We've established her as a character, but we haven't really established her yet. She was a minor character in one episode so far, but you know, she's already in the opening credits. However, we got Joe, and this episode gives us actually quite a bit of Joe kind of stuff going on, and I liked it. You could say that, you know, well, maybe he went a little too up and down in the episode in terms of like his mood, but I get it. Like, it makes sense because he's, I would say my only nitpick, and again, it's not the performance, because I think Jim Burns is great. It's not the story of this particular episode, because I think it's really cool to have Joe have a reason for Joe to be upset and go to Duncan over something that isn't Watcher related, isn't Immortal related, that at least he doesn't know it's Immortal related at the time.
Right.
Because he, you know, he's met someone and she works in antiques and doing research, but then that crosses paths. I liked the performance by Jim Burns as far as like going through the grief, because he's angry and then he's sad and then he's in the bottle and then he's kind of indifferent about it and he's trying to move past it, but then he gets angry again. And finally he's very relieved. My nitpick is I wish we could have established Joe was in a relationship prior to this episode so that carried a little more weight. You know what I mean? Cause we didn't have enough time to, we didn't know who this person was. So while everything that Joe went through makes sense, us as an audience, we can't connect on that emotional level with him as much as we could have, even if they had just mentioned the beginning of the season, hey, I've been seeing somebody, you know, hey, Joe, how are things going with Lauren, type of thing, instead of Duncan just learning about Lauren the night that she dies.
Right.
But again,
or maybe he just met her that previous episode or something, like,
right,
got a date with the girl.
A little something, just a little breadcrumb. That's my, and that's like nitpicky as all get out, because it doesn't take away from the emotional impact of Joe going through this. It just, there's a little bit of putting Lorne in the fridge, right? And that she's kind of unfortunately used just as a tool to upset and cause Joe pain.
Mm-hmm.
Which for the most part, the show has been fairly okay with not falling into those kinds of tropes too much.
Yeah.
But then I don't know how you would, there's no real way to have that kind of a story. I guess the only thing you could have done is have the person that gets brutalized and killed be one of his watchers. Now you lose some of the emotional impact of like, oh, it's somebody that Joe has fallen in love with. So I don't know. I'm flip-flopping on that a little bit because I like what they did with Joe in terms of giving him something that's making him happy. We've got the bar now and he's in a good mm-hmm. place in his own life. And now he's getting happy enough to meet somebody, but we only know of her enough for her to get killed and for that to be the catalyst for the events of this episode. So it's sort of
right. Yeah. I see why you're nitpicking it. Part of it, I think, comes from something we've talked about is how this is a syndicated show and mm-hmm. some stuff like that is just not quite possible. I think the watcher angle would have been a better angle. And here's what you would have done. It's a watcher who's killed, a female watcher.
Or even a male watcher. It doesn't even have to be a female watcher per se.
Well, no, here's what I do. Oh, female okay. watcher. He's talking about it. Amanda figures out immediately you were in love with her. And that's when they're like, that's why he's taking this so hard.
Okay. I could see that possibly working out.
If you do the watcher angle, I think that's how you do it to make it feel like, you know, you could do that. He's feeling terrible about it. Do some little slight, oh yeah, watchers aren't supposed to be fraternizing, but we broke the rules anyways. And that's how you get around that and just, you know, kind of push it. So,
yeah. Yeah, I think some of it is just I'm more cognizant of the concept of putting someone in the fridge.
Right.
And a lot of that, again, product of the time, right? We didn't think mm-hmm. about it in that way when this show was being made. Should we have? Yes. But it wasn't a normal thing to think about. It was just, we've got to create stakes. We've got to create stakes for this character. Here's an easy shorthand way to do that. So I think mm-hmm. it's me being a little more critical of that in through the lens of 2021.
Sure.
And what we've learned over the last, you know, 30 something years.
Which is fine. Things. I mean, it's an honest critique we've been having throughout this series of looking at this 90s-ass show through the lens of 2020. So
True. But what it did do was it did give us some great insights into Joe because we get to see him happy. We get to see him upset. And we get to see Jim Burns play guitar and sing and do what
he
does.
He's chewing up the scenery every frickin' time he's on camera. Mm-hmm. Like, this is... As much as there's, you know, he has only so much time on screen. Good Lord, does he use every second of it?
Sure. Oh yeah. No, he's great. He's great. It's nice to see Jim Burns get that focus. But I liked, mm-hmm. you know, he's got his bar, and he's up there when the bar is closed. He's upset. So what does he do? He puts it into his music, and it's something we get to learn about Joe Dawson.
Mm-hmm.
And for people that weren't familiar with it, Jim Burns too, because that's Jim Burns singing. It's Jim Burns playing guitar. So I dug that. And that was an original song of his.
They recorded that really well to make sure you knew that is him unmistakably doing that.
Yeah. And it's a great moment at the end where we got some fun moments because we get to see, a very happy Joe Dawson at the beginning, and he's even going so far as to kind of fanboy out over meeting Amanda.
Right.
We see him very down and upset with himself because he couldn't do enough to help Lauren, and he wants to get the guy that hurt her.
Mm-hmm.
We get to see, you know, a depressed Joe drinking, and then a friend, you know, even a new friend, Amanda, coming up to him and trying to help. But then at the end of it, as Joe is going through and processing things and singing his song and all that, we get to see, here's Duncan and Amanda. And Amanda's like, man, to be able to sing like that, the things he must have gone through. And these are people who have been alive. She's been alive for 1,000 years. And
right.
And so what that does is that as an audience gives us a real good hook of like, this is somebody who's been around for a long time and they are feeling the emotion this person is putting out right now.
Mm-hmm.
That was kind of cool. And then to have that exchange between them where she was like, you know, did you know that about him? And Duncan doesn't, right?
Yeah.
And that was a great line from him, which is like, this man knows more about me than anybody on the planet, and I don't know anything about him.
Yeah.
But the respect that he has for Joe when she says, are you going to ask him about it? And he's like, no. When he's ready, he'll tell me.
Right.
That was such a cool way to end this episode and a fun moment that is between Joe and Duncan without it having to be the two of them actually having the conversation. And I really dug that. So,
and again, just the relationship between Joe and Duncan, but also between Duncan and Amanda.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's a reason we just spent so much time earlier talking about Amanda, because of the way that her and Duncan work so well together. And you add in Joe, and it's just like, oh my gosh, these people are great.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So it's great, great work out of Jim Burns in this episode. I mean, look, we've talked at length ad nauseum about how much we love Jim Burns and we love the character Joe Dawson, but it's episodes like this are why. And that's
my last note about this episode was, and this is why Jim Burns is awesome.
Yes.
Changed my life, made me what I am.
What exactly are you?
Wealthy, powerful, intellectual. I deal with the finest scholars and artists of the age. I studied for decades. I speak 9 languages, including Latin and Greek.
So, okay, our final fight itself was good. But what I liked about it more was the setup for the final fight.
Right.
Because we've already established now that Durgan is smart and he's calculating and he's not going to put himself in a situation where he can be hurt. To the point where his stuff gets stolen and he kind of figures out what Duncan is trying to do to him. And so rather than fall for it and take the bait, he kidnaps Dawson and says, I will exchange your friend for my stuff and we will leave each other alone. Like he doesn't want to fight Duncan. Duncan wants his head. Right. So
one quick little thing I almost forgot to mention. The museum place where the cross is that they stole it from, did you notice that exterior shot that it looked exactly like the museum in Paris?
Yes.
Okay.
Probably I just had the same establishing shot. You're right.
Yeah, exactly. Anyways.
So he sets up the meet at the church, right? Holy ground.
Mm-hmm.
Smart move on his part. Duncan realizes that he has the ace up his sleeve, though, and that is Amanda. So he's already, he and Amanda stole the cross.
Mm-hmm.
Durgan doesn't know that Amanda was involved.
Right.
Or
that she's an immortal for all we know.
Right. Exactly.
Sees her on camera. He's never close to her, so he never gets the tingle around her.
Yeah, so it works out so perfectly then that Duncan uses that to his advantage and has Amanda just hide inside the church so that he feels her presence, because immortals can feel each other, but it's just the same feeling now for everybody. So now we know that as an audience too.
Right.
Because it's never really been established. It's just always been like they feel that presence. But all the time, it seems like Duncan or whoever it is tends to know who it is that's coming, usually because they're expecting it.
Right.
So it was kind of cool to see that used in this way, where Amanda just hid the whole time and was just there as a decoy. And it was enough to get Durgan to then run out off of holy ground where Duncan can fight him. And then they have their fight. And
right.
I also like the fact that this fight didn't have to take place while it was during the day. It didn't take place outside in the middle of the day in broad daylight.
Mm-hmm.
They went back underground. They were looked like an abandoned subway station maybe or something. There was
something like that.
Underground train. The fight itself, the choreography was pretty cool. I did.
Mm-hmm.
I liked the way they hid some of the shortcomings that maybe Brian James had as far as like doing the choreography. It's him in a lot of shots, but the wide shots, the stuff that would take a lot more athletic ability that he probably just didn't have at 50 years old with what looked like his legs probably breaking down on him. They were able to hide that with things like silhouettes up against a wall, or choreograph it in ways where he doesn't have to be shot in a wide shot.
Right.
So I did dig that. They did also use the raptor noise, which was dumb.
Yeah. That yell again.
But overall, it was a interesting fight. I liked that Durgan, even though he's out of the game, he's not dumb enough to not have his sword by his side.
Right. He's got his sword. I made a note that it definitely felt like he was fighting like a barbarian, not like somebody who's like super trained in all kinds of fight choreography, which he should have with all that money. But it's like, you know, he definitely seemed to be fighting just with brute strength, which can only take you so far when you're up against Duncan MacLeod.
Well, it's also consistent with his character, right? Because he has evolved outwardly over time and polished himself up, but he's still a pig in crushed linen or crushed velvet or whatever Duncan called him. So he's still a barbarian. He's just a barbarian in a $2,000 suit. So I think that's a fun little stylistic choice and a little thing that I think works. That again, you don't think about, like, I didn't think about the fact that you're right. His fighting style was very barbaric, very just brute strength, huge movements. You picked up on that, and that's, I like that because that tells me that it was a nice subtle move on their part.
Right. That's another thing that we find frequently with this show. There's tiny things that they do to tell you what's going on without blasting it like a neon sign. And it's really nice to see that in a show like this, where it's like, okay, somebody's thinking about this more than just it's two guys fighting. You know, it's like, no, this is Duncan MacLeod fighting. This is this guy fighting and his thought process of that. Like, they actually think that through enough.
Yeah, well, and that is a testament to the stunt team and the choreographers. Because when you're choreographing a fight in a film, you have a lot more time to stage all that out. And so you think about that. I mean, fight choreography, I talk a lot about the story of the fight because it's there. There's storytelling going on in these fights. And it's nice to see that they didn't cheap on that and they had good choreographers and people, good stunt teams that knew how to choreograph these things and tell a story and have these characters be characters in the fight and not just a couple of people. They're not just rotating out the same thing every week. These different characters that come into these episodes and have these fights, they're actually spending the time to come up with reasons and styles for them to fight with. And that's that is more than a mid-90s syndicated TV show needed to do on its budget, but it's what makes this show better than it has any right to be in a lot of ways.
Right.
So,
yep.
So yeah, it's a good episode. It's definitely a step up from last week. I think what we had was we had a really good season premiere. We had a really good second episode. Our third episode took a step back, not for anything other than it was just like it didn't hit the bar that we had set in those first two episodes, but we're stepping back up towards that. This is another good one. Elevated by Brian James, elevated by your smaller parts in the flashbacks being just more memorable, more believable. I liked that. I will say that Father Peter, I think was his name. Yeah, Father Peter's death Father Peter's death was maybe a little overdramatic with the whole swear it thing, but but whatever. I don't fault him for that. Like it's cheese ball and it's fine. But yeah, I think this is a good episode again. So I definitely had a good time with it.
For sure. This was another good Highlander episode. For sure.
Now, next week's episode is Rite of Passage. And I believe, we doesn't look like we get a Richie in that. I thought maybe this was a Richie episode, but it doesn't appear to be. But Rite of Passage, I don't remember it. So we'll see. We'll see what it is next week.
We'll see. Oh, it's another Amanda episode, I think.
Oh.
So this should be interesting.
Excellent. Well, and I'm all for it.
Yeah.
Now, if you like this show, we do record it live. twitch.tv/TVsTravis every Tuesday night at 9 p.m. Eastern time. You can come hang out and be like Ace, Ace of the Jungle. We got Danny Ora in there. We get some people that pop in and out every once in a while. Monkey Bananas sometimes shows up. Nigel's sometimes in there, and it's great. We love seeing people in the chat. You can kind of see how we frame things, how we get ready to talk about stuff, chat with us in between little segments as we're recording. It's kind of fun. So that's every Tuesday night. And then the show comes out on Thursdays in the podcast feeds. And you can get that at anchor.fm/Let's Watch Highlander or anywhere you get podcasts. And leaving ratings and reviews on the podcatchers, the different databases, does help the show become more discoverable. So if people are looking for just a show to listen to, they can find it. And then spreading word of mouth if you want to. You can also interact with us on Twitter. We love hearing from people. I am TV's Travis, TVS Travis on Twitter. And we also have, Audi is?
Oddly Normal One, with the one spelled out.
And if you follow Audi, you do get to see his dope artwork that he does for every episode. So that's always fun stuff. This week's was really cool, too. I really liked your rendition of the cross. Of Saint Antoine.
That was fun trying to just find captures of it where I could make out what the heck is going on with that cross.
So. Right. You definitely caught the detail of it. So good work. Good work there. Next week is Rite of Passage. And remember that there can be only one immortal that sounds like a damn velociraptor.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.